Chapter 18. The Priest and His Offering. The freed Hebrew slaves, you'll recall, made their way out of Egypt, across the Red Sea, and through the desert, arriving in due course in the promised land of Canaan. There, life gradually settled into a routine. After the period of the judges, the monarchy was established, and the third king, Solomon, built the great temple in Jerusalem. There, the system of worship based on animal sacrifices ticked over steadily. The people were still a long way from ditching the dreadful practice of blood sacrifices, and for the time being God went along with it because it was a fixture in ancient society and the time was not yet right for getting rid of it. So he accommodated the practice among the Israelites. He did so even to the point of allowing it to be the vehicle of his fellowship with them, and in particular the means by which sins could be dealt with. That brings us to the Day of Atonement, signpost 7. The Day of Atonement, like Passover, was an annual festival of the Jewish people. Its Hebrew name is Yom Kippur. Originally held in the tabernacle as they travelled through the desert and in the early years of their life in Canaan, the practice continued in Solomon's temple. With the people standing all around in awed silence, the high priest alone would go through the curtain into the Holy of Holies, the place of God's localized presence, carrying smoking incense and a bowl of animal blood. There he would sprinkle some of the blood on the gold-plated atonement cover, that is, the lid of the chest called the Ark of the Covenant. Then he would come back out through the curtain to a corporate sigh of relief from the people. The relief was that the holy presence of God, to which he had drawn near on their behalf, had not struck him dead. That's why he took blood in there. Once again, it's a substitute thing. The blood was proof that death had taken place already. But the people's relief was also that, for another year, the nation's sins had been dealt with. The whole purpose of the exercise was to make atonement for the sins of the Israelites. They had been told, "On this day atonement will be made for you to cleanse you. Then, before the Lord, you will be clean from all your sins." At that stage in history, sins were viewed as a corporate issue. While individuals were no doubt conscious of personal sins, the sacrificial system did not focus on those. Its central concern was the way in which, as a nation, they had fallen short of God's requirements and strayed from his ways. The Day of Atonement thus brought national forgiveness, but that doubtless trickled down into the consciousness of individual Jews so that they felt personally forgiven too. Two components were key to the annual ceremony: the high priest himself and the blood he took in there, the offerer and the offering. The New Testament takes up these aspects and applies them to Jesus. The letter to the Hebrews portrays Jesus as the high priest to end all high priests. The ones who served the Israelites were mortal. They served for a few years before growing old and dying, requiring someone else to fill the post, since the Yom Kippur offering had to be made year after year. But Jesus, because he has overcome death and is now alive forever, will fulfill his high priestly role forever. His intercessory function in God's presence is permanent. Or, as the letter to the Hebrews puts it, because Jesus lives forever, he has a permanent priesthood. Therefore, he is able to save completely those who come to God through him, because he always lives to intercede for them. There's another difference. The high priest of Israel went through the curtain of the temple into the Holy of Holies, which was merely an earthly representation of the true presence of God. It was a copy and shadow of what is in heaven. But Jesus went into the real presence of God when he ascended to heaven. And another difference. the Israelite high priest took into the Holy of Holies an offering of animal blood to make atonement for the sins of the nation. And what did Jesus take into God's presence? He offered himself. We might say he took his own blood. He went through the curtain into God's presence, having shed his own blood on our behalf. That blood was the perfect offering, sufficient to deal with sins once for all and never needing to be repeated. So Jesus was at the same time both the offerer and the offering, the high priest and the sacrifice. This is rich imagery with a host of interconnected meanings. But the bottom line is simple. Through his death on the cross, Jesus dealt with the sin issue once and for all. Never again will anything need to be done about it, because it has been definitively sorted. That means that your personal sin issue has been sorted. It's interesting that whereas the Old Testament focused on the sins of the nation of Israel as a whole, the New Testament drills down to the individual level. It assures you that your sin, with its power and its consequences, has been dealt with by Jesus. That's why the Apostle Paul and millions of Christians since have been thrilled to state with confidence, "The Son of God loved me and gave himself for me." Try speaking that out loud. Let the wonder of it sink in.